kittens. We are back with another very special stay-at-home self-quarantine episode of the BrandoCast. Holy fucking shit. Holy fucking shit. Today's guest, literally one of the most talented motherfuckers on the planet Earth today, and one of the busiest. So thank the Lord, the baby Jesus Christ, that we have the very special, the very awesome, the very North Shore-ish, Lauren Lapkus.
Hi.
Yeah. Have you ever done a podcast, Lauren?
No, I'm scared.
I can't even believe that I was able to book you into like this dumb little thing.
I'm so excited. I mean, I'm great. I'm just very happy to be here. I was going to say I'm grateful, but that felt a little over the top.
Grateful to hang out with a hobo like me for the
next 40. Well, that's true. I am grateful to hang out.
Before we get going on today's topic, which is Belle and Sebastian, ladies and gentlemen, yes. Lauren and I have done our dear friend Arden Marine's Bachelor, Bachelorette-themed podcast many, many times. Lauren is one of the primary players in Arden's Will You Accept This Rose podcast. I've been fortunate enough to do it many times. And as we wrap up yet another season of The Bachelorette, Lauren, you're in a safe space right here. You can give me your honest assessment of the current season.
I just watched the most recent episode last night, and the finale airs in a couple of days, which I'm so grateful for, because I am grateful for that, because I'm grateful it's ending, because I feel like this has been one of the hardest seasons. I was really pro this season because I was excited that there were two bachelorettes. I've watched for a million years, and I felt like we need to spice it up. You know what I mean? Like, recent years, it's gotten a little bit stale. So I thought this was exciting. But right now, I'm just starting to get frustrated. I don't think any real relationships are coming out of this. I don't feel positive that Rachel's going to have anything happen. I don't think there's anything happening there. I think you could see on her face. In the clip, you know how, like, with the whole part one, they're showing the little inset in the corner of the people reacting to the show. You can see her face, how hardened and scared and sad it is as she watches herself say all these things to these men. And then they keep leaving. She only has one left, but does she even want to be with him? Does he want to be with her? And then the other one only has one left. And I'm like, it's not usually like this. Usually there's a few people who are dying to marry the person. And right now it's dicey.
Well, full disclosure, I have done some deep diving on the interwebs. Wow. And I believe that Gabby's relationship is going to blow up before all is said and done.
That does not surprise me.
Lauren and I are recording this podcast right before the season finale. If things go according to reality, Steve, Gabby is about to find out that her dude had been texting with an ex, had been dating someone right until the time he got booked on the show. Yes. And he said something to the ex along the lines of, I'm just going on this show because it'll help my career. He wasn't working at the time.
What, doing like the stuff with the like contractor construction man?
I assume all these fuckers are.
He's
are
like,
actors.
I'm gonna get many more construction gigs after this, okay? I'm gonna get hired so much. That's so dumb.
Right.
Of course they're all actors.
They're all actors. And I think he also texted the ex something like, I still love you. They'd only been dating for 2 months when he got the call.
Oh no. That's you call it. It's over. It's over. What?
Yeah.
And of course, his whole family. This is Tino, right? His whole family. Or no, this is not Tino.
Eric. Tino is with Eric. Rachel, but that's blowing up as well.
Oh, Gabby's Eric. Oh, God, yeah. Eric.
Gabby's
okay, no, but
Eric.
Tino's going to blow up because his whole family hates her.
And apparently, according to Reality Steve, again, this is a safe space. Sorry, people. I know they're, you know, we're going to break the bubble a little bit. Apparently, she and Tino are no longer talking.
Well, that checks out. Feels about right to me. Yeah, of course not. What a disaster. They, you know, it was also rough how they were like letting guys like pick whichever team they were going to be on. I was like, this is nasty. She picked you. That's where you stay. Like, this is bad. It made me feel bad.
If you, I'm going to give you a producer hat. I'm going to give Lauren Lapkus the, I'm going to give you the reins through my magic powers. I'm going to give you the reins of the franchises. What would you do to turn this burning ship around?
Oh my God. Here's what we need. This is why I've been saying it for years and years and years. Here's what we need. We need real bodies. We need people who are of the age where marriage is logical. We need them to be 35 and above, and they do. And the requirement is you don't have a six pack. Okay. I need people who want to get married. I don't want people who want to fuck a lot or are going to work out all day long and drink their protein and whey bullshit. I want people who want to have a relationship and connect on an emotional level with another human being. And I want to see that. And I'm also, I'm open to gay relationships. I think we need to break that open. And you just go, if you have sex in the house, you're out. Okay? That's it.
I you know, I've been working on The Bachelor Silver Lake, where 30 men, women, and non-binary contestants compete for the heart of a young baby writer, of a guy who started on Young Sheldon, but he's just, you know, languishing in a development deal right now. But, you know, those are some of the things that we don't care about bodies at all. We don't. Hot people bring a lot of fucking problems to these reality
hot
shows.
Hot people are so up their own ass, and they also are missing a lot in terms of personality. So I think we need people who are a little unique, and we need them now. The model is screwed. It never works. When was the last marriage we had? Jordan and what's her name?
JoJo.
And JoJo. And that took them 6 years to do it. Okay. Which is good. It should. But it was just like, it's not what the show's doing anymore.
For some reason. And I'm so embarrassed to admit this, but I am like invested in Jordan and JoJo's relationship. And just because of the way that I follow them out in the world, he's going to be the one to fuck it up. Because he's on TV, he's college football, he's got the hot co-host on the College Game Day show.
I did not know this.
There's co-eds running around. Oh, yeah, he's got like a legit big job. They both do.
I'm glad for them that they got real jobs. I feel like it's good that they're not trying to be actors. I do. That's always a little scary. Or she didn't go on Dancing with the Stars, did she?
God, that's a great question. I do not know that, but apparently the new scandal right now with the current Bachelorette franchise is that Gabby was asked to do Dancing with the Stars. Rachel was not.
And see, this is what I'm talking about. I thought it was a good idea to have two. They're pitted against each other. And Rachel, I'm sorry to say, was extremely unable to control her emotions and her self-esteem during the process. I can't imagine it's easy, but she was taking everything so personally and being so offended that she couldn't even have fun with the guys who were right in front of her. And that was frustrating. And so I feel like people don't really want to put that into Dancing with the Stars. No offense, but I feel that Gabby is a much lighter presence. She's kind of there to have fun. She probably wouldn't take it personally if she got a bad score, whereas Rachel might, you know, want to attack her partner or dump them entirely. And it's just, I think we need the positivity, you know. Rachel has it. Or Gabby has that, excuse me.
That's fantastic. Okay, well said. No, you kind of blew my mind. I didn't even think about it in those terms, but you're right. They just wanted a drama-free situation.
Yeah.
Wow.
Gabby's just a light, fun person.
Yeah, understood. I'm tired of the competition. I'm tired of the facade of it. That's why I have thrown all my garbage TV focus to Summer House, Winter House, and Southern Charm. Because it's just hot people getting hammered and smashing into each other. And that's it.
See, I don't watch any of those, but I have to draw the line somewhere because I watch like 15 shows and there's just only so much I can do, you know? I had to drop 90 Day Fiancé. I was like all in for years. I went and met some of them at an event. I mean, I was in, but I feel it's gotten a little redundant. And then I felt like it just started to make me feel sad, you know? Sometimes you get depressed.
That show, I feel like I need to like do like three shots of whiskey as soon as that show is over. It is so dark. It is so dark. It is just so, it's also like semi-racist. It's just
there's a
so
lot happening on that show.
True or false, nearly every man, American man who's been on 90 Day Fiancé also stormed the Capitol on January 6th.
Oh my God. Did you watch that one where it was that guy who had that girlfriend in Russia?
Oh yeah, the guy who lived up in, they were in Washington, the big giant guy.
Yeah.
I forget that guy's name. He definitely hit a cop with a fire extinguisher on that day. There's no question in my mind.
I think it was Mike and Natalia or Natasha.
Exactly. And she's on the current show, like being single in America now or something.
No. Oh, God. Yeah. He lived in the middle of a wheat field. I think she didn't understand like America could be not fun. Like you can live somewhere in the middle of nowhere and have nothing. I mean, that's and that was like a lot, I think, for her to come into this place. You think you might see New York City. You know what I mean? Or like a store. You know, right. But there was nothing around her. I would have been devastated.
That's my favorite thing. When the bride who dreams of coming to America her whole life, which means New York or Los Angeles.
Yes.
Comes and they're in fucking like southwestern Ohio.
Yeah. Yeah. That's America.
Your food choices are Hardee's, McDonald's, Burger King. Wow, there's a Rack's roast beef that's still open. Holy shit, how the fuck did that happen?
I know. Well, she was really judgmental about his eating too. She was like, you're going to eat that? Like, it was like very like, okay, yeah, he's eating this. He goes to OCB and gets wild. Like, that's what's happening. Like, there are not normal restaurants, okay?
Oh, it's the best. All right, well, that's enough reality TV catch up. I'm so glad that we were able to speak freely about the Bachelor, Bachelorette franchises. But the reason that I asked Lauren Lapkus here today is to talk about the following band.
A mile and a half on a bus takes a long time. The odor of all prison food takes a long time.
Belle and Sebastian are a Scottish indie pop band formed in Glasgow in 1996. Led by Stuart Murdoch, the band has released 11 albums. They are often compared with acts such as The Smiths and Nick Drake. The name Belle and Sebastian comes from Belle et Sebastian. I hope I fucked that up. A 1965 children's book by French writer Cecile Aubry about a six-year-old boy and his dog Belle, who is a Great Pyrenees. Though consistently lauded by critics, Belle and Sebastian's wistful pop has enjoyed only limited commercial success. And before I ask you about Belle and Sebastian, I want to say, fuck you, Wikipedia, for that little slam against Belle and Sebastian.
I know. It's like you don't again. Need to say it like that.
That was so lame. Belle and Sebastian's wistful pop has only enjoyed limited commercial success. So that's a full disclosure. I have just called bits of information about Belle and Sebastian from Wikipedia, but I need to know, Lauren Lapkus, what does Belle and Sebastian mean to you?
Oh my God. Well, this band I got into in high school because a guy that I had a crush on liked them. And so I went to the record store and I was like, okay, I'm going to get that. And then I got a few other, you know, I love music. And so I was excited just to hear what is it that he likes. Cause also we didn't have, I had LimeWire, but I wasn't downloading it. I went to go buy the CD. I'm going to listen to this. And I loved it so much. I was so excited that I had found a new band. It was like, you know, that feeling is just the best, especially in high school. It's like, you're like, oh my God. Like when I found, well, your shirt, Led Zeppelin, I was like, oh my God, do people know about this? Like, dude, this is crazy. And the Smiths and Nick Drake. It's funny. Like all of those were like right around that time for me. And I just got so obsessed with them. And I really thought that this would be my favorite band for my entire life. And I had posters in college in my room. I had 3 Belle and Sebastian posters. I was very committed to this band. And I saw them in concert once. And then I fell off for many years. I just like my whole mid-20s to now, I would say. I was like, I don't really care anymore. I guess they're not my favorite band. I recently got back into them. They have a new album. I got back into them. And I was like, I've listened to it all the time now. And I'm like, oh my God, yes. And it's that nostalgic feeling too of when things were so simple, you know?
What high school did you go to?
I went to Evanston Township High School in Evanston, Illinois.
You are a wild kid.
Yes. And you were a wild cat?
I was a wild cat. And I want to say, for people who listen to this podcast regularly, there's probably a drinking game associated, which is every time I say the words Evanston or Northwestern or, well, when I was in college, blah, 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 take a shot of whiskey. But yes, it is true. We have that shared cultural experience, though you grew up in the most fabulous place on earth.
I agree.
Yeah. Evanston, there's just something about Evanston, Illinois. I'm always struck by how many talented people grew up there and went to Evanston Township High School, because during my time, I got to meet some, you know, ETHS students or people who had gone there. And then when I moved to LA, of my generation, it wasn't just the Cusacks and the Pivens, but so many other unbelievably talented people who I became friends with. And I've just always been struck by, like, the unbelievable talent that has come from that odd little place north of Chicago.
It's pretty crazy. I mean, I think there's so many people who came from there. And just to give some people some current, like Anders Holm from Workaholics and Zach Guilford, who's been on like 5 billion things, Friday Night Lights. We have, of course, the Pivens and the Cusacks, but then Jessie Mueller, I'm sorry, who was on Broadway, and she was starring in Waitress and Beautiful, the Carole King story. She's like incredible singer. I mean, there's so many people. It's actually crazy. And then if you go on the Wikipedia, like, which I do from time to time, and like see some more people, I'm like, oh, wait, the person who wrote Time Traveler's Wife, it went to ETHS. Like, this is crazy random stuff.
Did you do Piven Theater?
I did not. I was actually afraid to do it. I was into children's theater, and I did like local stuff at like the Levy Center and Fleetwood Jourdain and a couple little places where they would have and like a JCC nearby as well. And I love doing that stuff, but I was kind of afraid to really take classes. And I had some friends who did. And my husband now, turns out he was there doing that stuff when I was a kid. He's 4 years younger than me, but he grew up in Beverly on the south side of Chicago. I'm a go-do Piven. But no, I didn't. And I look back and I'm like, oh, I kind of missed out on like a great opportunity there. There's so many cool people involved.
It's another weird thing. Like all these like talented kids, my friend Polly Noonan, who's riding on the back of the bus at the end of Ferris Bueller, the little girl in glasses. My friend Lauren Katz, of course, the great Laura Craft, who everyone loves and adores. When I was graduating school and looking at my, like, what are the avenues that I could possibly go down? If I was to stay in Chicago, I was more interested in like what the New Criminals were doing, which was the theater company
literally criminals. I was like, you had different aspirations.
Yeah, I did. Well, that's what I ended up doing. No. The Cusack and Piven and their friends started a theater company, and they were doing like really, really cool stuff at the end of the 80s and the early 90s in Chicago. But, you know, I thought I was the most fucking talented person in the world, so I came out here right away. I did not stay in Chicago after school ended, which I should have.
Yeah.
There's no shoulda, coulda, woulda, but that is kind of a shoulda for me. Although the fun thing about my life is eventually I meet everybody who stayed in Chicago, who did Improv Olympic, who did Second City, who did Looking Glass, or, you know, tried to throw in with Steppenwolf or whatever.
Yeah.
So, you know, eventually everyone comes out here. But Evanston was just such an amazing place to me. I will say this to you. I worked at Bennigan's of Evanston. I don't know if Bennigan's was still open when you were a child.
Oh, it was open then, and it's open now. I just was there recently. I had an extremely disappointing donut. I don't want to throw Bennigan's under the bus. I had other things that were good, but I came in for this donut, and I was like, I can't even eat this donut. I was very sad.
Bennigan's.
Oh, I'm sorry. Bennigan's. Oh, wait. Bennigan's. Bennigan's like the restaurant?
Bennigan's the restaurant, which was...
Oh, no. That's not there anymore. But that was there when I was growing up. Bennigan's, of course, like a TGI Fridays sort of thing.
1,000%.
Yeah. Bennigan's. Not my typical bakery. Did go there, had a bad donut. Don't want to throw them under the bus, but I also usually love Tag's Bakery. So I just want to give them a shout out. Bennigan's.
Yeah.
I went there.
I would imagine you did. That was an incredible, horrible, dysfunctional, cocaine-ridden place to work in the late 80s. We had this thing in the summer of 1989, the promotion at Bennigan's, and it was in the spot where the Pete Miller Steakhouse is. The promotion was, you get your lunch in 15 minutes or less, or Bennigan's pays for it.
Wow.
So lunchtime was just filled with every secretary in the city of Evanston having lunch. And it was just the most stressful fucking situation.
What a horrible idea.
The worst. And we wore timers around our neck. Wow. So as soon as the people finish their order, you hit the timer and you put it on the table. Cut to you sprinting around the corner with food and some jerk off holding up a timer that's over and done. And you're like, look, I got a free lunch. And then you would get in trouble. So every day
it's a horrible idea, though, because you have everybody is coming for that deal. So then you have way too many people at lunch.
Everybody.
It's like
everybody. And people would be dicks about their order. They would order things that they knew would take the kitchen longer to make, even though most everything was microwaved.
Nasty.
But it was, that was, I still have nightmares about that, that work experience at Bennigan's of Evanston.
Yeah.
Monday morning, wake up knowing that you gotta go to school.
Bell and Sebastian were formed in Glasgow in 1994 by Stuart Murdoch and Stuart David, both of whom had enrolled at Stowe College's beatbox program for unemployed musicians. Together with music producer Alan Rankin, they recorded some demos which were picked up by Stowe's music business course that produced and released one single each year on the college's label, Electric Honey. That label was so impressed with the demos that these guys put together that they were then allowed to record a full-length record. That resulted in Tiger Milk, which was recorded in 3 days. And originally, only 1,000 copies were pressed on vinyl. The early days of Bell and Sebastian. Did you go to DePaul?
I did.
Oh, my God. Did DePaul have a program called Beatbox for Unemployed Musicians?
You know, I didn't explore that. It's so specific. But I loved that album. Tiger Milk was my favorite. And that was... it was extremely exciting. I remember I got that album and I was in high school and we went on a trip to Stratford, Ontario to go to the Shakespeare Festival. Okay. And we're on a bus. Is that how we got there? I guess. Does that make sense? That's a long time probably. But we were on a bus. We didn't fly. And I put that on my Discman and I was trying to be like, does anyone see what I'm listening to? Like, you know what I mean? And no one cared. And but it was great. And I really remember getting into my seat. And then we had some weed cookies secretly. I think I ate like half of one. And I was like, you know, like you just pretend that you're messed up. Tasted more like pepper, if I'm being honest.
Where did you get the weed cookies?
Somebody made them. Yeah, this guy made them and was kind of secretly handing them out.
Were you guys also doing a Shakespeare show?
No.
At this festival?
This was the theater, like, department in high school. Anyone who was kind of in plays could sign up for this. And then we just went to go watch 5 million boring-ass plays. I mean...
amazing.
I find Shakespeare really boring, honestly. I have a hard time... with that, and I'm an English major as well, so like I had to read a lot of Shakespeare, and I'm just like, I don't know. But I saw The King and I there, which it blew my mind. I remember I was sobbing, and that is one of my favorite musicals, and I was really close up, and it was so beautifully done, and I loved that. That's my favorite memory from that trip.
Okay, DePaul has a crazy theater program. Is that why you went down to Lincoln Park?
No, I didn't do theater there. I was doing improv already in high school at IO. And so I wanted to stay in Chicago to keep doing that. And so I went to DePaul kind of just because. And my mom went there. So it was like, oh, I'll just go to DePaul. I really, and I got an early admission. Like I submitted, you know, my application like in the beginning of my senior year, and I knew by November, early decision, whatever, I knew by November that I was going there in my senior year. So I was like really checked. It was like very hard to care about anything once you kind of know what the next step is. Like, I just want to be doing that. But no, I didn't do the theater program. And it's very competitive. And I don't know that I could have hacked it at all. I was like learning my whole craft through improv. So,
okay, well, that's phenomenal, because Improv Olympic is a very special place. The alumni, for people listening outside the city of Los Angeles or Chicago, just Google Improv Olympic and just look through the list of people that ran through that place. It's bonkers. It's absolutely bonkers. So you started taking classes at IO when you were a teenager?
Yeah. So I was in, I was a senior in high school, and I wouldn't get into any plays at school. I auditioned for everything and I never got into anything. And then I would only get into YAMO, which was our sketch show every year that we did, which is kind of a take on Northwestern show. But I had a teacher who was like, oh, you should go do improv classes. Like, that's what you should be doing. And then I was like, okay, so excited. And then I didn't know anything about it. So I was like, I had like read books about Second City and stuff. Like, I was very into like the comedy world. I liked that, but I didn't know that I could do that at that point. And I didn't really even think about taking classes there. It was more just like I liked learning about who went on to SNL and like where did they start, and then I'll read about that. And I started doing the classes on every Saturday, and it was like so awesome. And I missed one class because of prom. And then everyone like wanted to see my photos, and I brought my printed photos out the next week. And like everyone was like in their 20s, so it was like kind of funny to them, you know? And I was like kind of shy about it. But then they all became like my best friends. So it was a really cool experience.
Do you remember who was your teacher?
I had Jason Chin. I had TJ Jagodowski, Susan Messing, Noah Gregoropoulos, Peter Gwynn. I think that might be everyone. But yeah, it was a really amazing lineup.
That's pretty fucking fantastic. Yeah. Wow. So you got to see, when you were young, you got to see like the TJ and Dave show and stuff like that.
Yeah. And it was mind blowing. I mean, all of those shows like I would go see Armando with some of my friends, which was like their monologue show. And there'd be like one person does monologues and everyone does scenes based on those. And I was blown away. Like, I was in an improv group with my high school friends, and we like liked seeing stuff, but we didn't know how they were doing it. Like, I remember watching people do like object work and just being like, I see the thing that they're imagining is there. Like, it was just like, it all blew my mind so much.
This will kind of blow your mind, but 1 week ago from the time that you and I are recording, I hosted the Armando show, even though Sharna has ruined the Improv Olympic in Hollywood. It doesn't exist anymore.
It's gone.
Our friend Seamus McCarthy put together a group of people to come back and do the Armando show at this little comedy theater in Glendale.
Awesome.
And back in the day, my friends and I would hang out at the bar at IO in the early 2000s, because all of our friends were in the shows. And I was often the default Armando. If the celebrity monologuist did not show up, or monologist, then I would get the call to come and host Armando, which I did many, many times. So cut to me hosting with a group of awesome people a week ago. And they're going to try to resurrect some sort of form of IO West here in LA now.
Good. I know IO Chicago is going to be with the new owners or something, but I was just in town for a month and I drove around kind of all the old spots to see what's going on. And the original spot is like it's been bought by like I don't know. It's made into like condos on top and like shops on the bottom. It's like a mall. And then they have like a fudge shop where IO was. And I'm just like, this is so sad, because that was like it was like this grungy theater you could just stumble into, which people did because fucking Wrigley Field was right there and everyone's drunk and wandering in. And like, it was exciting. Like, I loved the feeling. There's something about entering a very dirty building where fun art is happening that just feels so special. And there's fewer and fewer places like that. Now everything is just getting so, you know, taken over and made into, and even like when they built the new IO, it was too fancy. It was like, they're like four stages and like a huge bar. And it's like, it's not the same. Like, you want it to feel kind of gross. Like, you want it to feel like it's like, that's what's good about, like, it's part of it. It makes the fact that we're making it up look better. Like, it's all just, it helps the whole thing. I don't know.
The amazing thing about the old I.O. is that you have this incredible improv theater. So many heavy hitters came through that place. Yet it's right in the middle of Bro Town.
Yeah.
Bro Town. Directly across the street from a place where on Saturday mornings, bros get together to drink buckets of Bud Light and throw up on Clark
Street. They just barf all the way down the street. Like, I don't even know. I don't know if there's an equivalent, like, here, because at Dodger, you get in your car and drive away, and I don't know, but like, we don't have that experience. This is a very unique thing. Like, there's the stadium is in the middle of a very busy neighborhood. It's just a neighborhood. There's homes and apartments and like a couple shops and bars, and then people just barfing everywhere. It's like, so it's like my memories of that time are girls dressed like, I mean, they're called Trixie, Linkin Park Trixies. I mean, did you have that phrase? Did you call them that?
No. Please
Linkin Park
explain.
Trixies are like, it's maybe it's a super like early 2000s thing, but it was like, you know, the style is like going out to bars with your gross boyfriend and you're going to the Cubs game and you wear like a short skirt that's like, you know, like one of those like pleated sort of like juicy skirts or something with like your hoodie, and then you have your necklace and then you have your hat, but your hair is really straightened and like you're wasted, and that's what it is. I mean, that's it. That's
it's love. Linkin Park Trixies. Now, do they have to be affluent Linkin Park girls?
They are. I mean, they're like kind of inherently like they're just rich. They don't know. And then they get blackout drunk every weekend. I mean, that's it. I don't know if it's still a thing. I don't know if that was like a moment in time, but that's what we called it.
No, I think it is. I wrote on a show that was set in Wrigleyville. It was called My Boys. It was on TBS.
Oh, wow.
And it chronicled the life of a young woman who just had a bunch of guy friends. But their bar was supposed to be Guthrie's. It was called Crowley's in My Boys, but it was very much inspired by Guthrie's, which is just one of those classic Linkin Park bars that is just filled with people in their 20s, cut to throwing up in the streets.
Yes.
And so we went back quite a bit, and I don't think Wrigleyville could ever be anything but Bro Town, even though it's super fucking expensive.
No, I know. But now it's just changed so much. Like, Clark Street is just so commercial. It's just so different. I mean, like, I don't know. I feel sad when things get totally, like, you know, smoothed over in that way. Like, it was just like, it was funky, and that was kind of great. I mean, I don't know. Can't there just still be bars? I don't like when, like, what sucked was the whole place where I.O. was like a whole block was bought by this one company. So they made it one gigantic
building
that has like a parking structure. And it's just like, you just go and get your, you know, Subway at the bottom and go up to your condo, like whatever. It's really like blah.
Oh, get me away from here, I'm dying.
After the success of Tiger Milk, Belle and Sebastian were signed to Jeepster Records in August of 1996. If you're feeling sinister, their second album was released that November. The album was named by Spin Magazine as one of the 100 greatest albums between 1985 and 2005, and it is widely considered to be the band's masterpiece. Rolling Stone featured the album at number 75 on its list of 100 best albums of the 90s. If you're feeling sinister. Give me a little picture of Lauren Lapkus at DePaul during your time.
Oh my God. Well, I had a roommate my freshman year in a dorm, and the room was so small. Did you have a roommate in Northwestern?
My freshman year. I did. I lived in a freshman year dorm, then my silly fraternity.
Oh my God, what dorm? Where was your dorm?
My dorm was Allison, which was directly across the street from Burger King.
Oh yeah. Well, I used to go to that Burger King like every day in high school.
I, on mushrooms, I went behind the counter and started barking out orders over the microphone. So
I love that. I'm sorry to tell you that Burger King is now done. It is an empty shell. It's a husk. I hope they put a new Burger King so I can feel all my memories. No, I don't give a shit. But I did love going there and I ate so many fucking chicken tenders. Oh my God. That was my jam. That was my after school snack, was a chicken tender meal. And then you have dinner. I don't, it's very hungry at that time in your life. But I lived in the dorms my freshman year, and that was kind of not good for me, I think, looking back. I felt very claustrophobic, and I didn't really connect with my roommate. And I would often just go out and do my improv thing every night. And so like we kind of had totally different vibes. She was more like in college tricksy mode, and I was kind of in like, I'm weird, and I ride a bike, you know, like whatever. So... I loved getting out and being with all my friends, and I loved being in the city. It was so fun. And that was exciting enough just to like not be, you know, in your childhood home anymore. And then my sophomore through senior year, I moved in with some friends from IO, and then we had kind of a revolving door of roommates, and we had parties constantly where everyone was invited. There was an improv message board online, and we'd go on there and just post that we're having a party and anyone can come. And then it would be the best parties all the time. Oh, it was so fun. Just always the best. And everyone was there. It was like, and you know, the interesting thing about improv is that you have such a wide range of ages in your friend group. So it's like, I'm like 19 and like, I'm like talking to 40-year-old men like all the time. You know, it's like, just like, it's kind of like weird when you look back. But I loved it.
Yes. And let's just, I say this lovingly, men who are drawn to improv, not necessarily, well, they can be creepy. So,
sure. But not all of them. No, not all of them. But right. I think the creep factor happens more with longevity. It's like, you know, some people become amazing people that you're, oh, wow, they're the most amazing improviser in the world. They're like the best. And then some of them just kind of hang on for a long time. Mm-hmm. But sometimes they cross over. There's a Venn diagram there too, where it's like, because they're so amazing at improv, they can get any girl who shows up. And then that creates a creep factor for sure. Mm-hmm.
So you're hanging out, you've got 1 foot in college, but 1 foot in adulthood.
Yeah.
Cause IO's rocking. And do you start to see the path? Because by the time you're at IO, you can look back and say, well, so-and-so is on Saturday Night Live, and so-and-so is writing for Tina, and so-and-so is on this sitcom, and, well, my God, Jack McBrayer is on 30 Rock. Holy shit. Like, are you starting in your own head to go, okay, I can do this, and I can keep moving forward? Okay, great.
Yeah, so, like, I think when I started in high school, I had no, like, idea of it leading to something for me specifically. It was more that I was just like, oh, I don't get to do plays and I want to be funny. And how do I do that? And like, it was like, I just loved learning it. But once you get into the world of it more and you're hanging out with everyone, it's like you hear how all these things sort of lead to other things. And so that was my goal, is like get on SNL. And like, that's what I wanted my whole life. Mm-hmm. So it was like, oh, I now see that there's like a path to this. And then I think what I didn't understand was that it could lead to so many other things. I didn't know you could be a writer on TV and that you could do like, I didn't understand that path towards so many cool other jobs and just being an actor in other things. So I kind of had a one track mind, but it was all I knew was like, oh, I like this one show. And there's actually books about how people got on it. Where with like TV shows, like, I don't know, I don't know how to do that. So it felt like, oh, there's like this clear path. But and it was interesting, like watching people, you know, get that dream. It's mm-hmm. a wild experience because, I mean, mm-hmm. so many people get to do it that, you know, like it actually does happen. It doesn't feel as insane as when you're a kid watching it going, how do you ever get to do something, you know?
Well, for me, the mind fuck is always when someone who you don't think has any talent goes to the head of the line.
Well, of course, that happens all the time. That happens all the time. We're not talking about SNL necessarily. It's like that happens everywhere. It's insane.
Yeah, it's
insane. Then you have to deal with that. So it's a lot about, you know, it's a thick skin. It's like telling yourself to keep going and being persistent and believing in yourself. And like, there's so much that it takes from within you when you're watching all of that happen with other people. It's interesting.
Now, I know about you that UCB, the Upright Citizens Brigade, is part of your journey. So how do you get from Chicago to UCB?
Yeah, so I was in a sketch, like I had a sketch partner and we would do stuff around town and we were going to move to LA. And then the last second she was like, I want to move to New York. My family's in upstate New York. And I was like, all right. And so we just did that. Like I was like, I've always wanted to live there. This will be a chance to try that. And so I was planning just to live there for like a year and I stayed a little over a year and then I moved to LA. But I did UCB while I was there, which was so important because moving to a new place is so, it's so hard to make friends. I feel like I'm so grateful for improv because every time I moved, I had like a community instantly of like cool, funny people. It's like kind of amazing. So I met a lot of great people there. I met Sean Diston, who's a fantastic TV writer and comedian, and my friend Laura Wilcox, same to her. She's written on so many great shows. And like, that was so amazing to get to meet them. And like, we were just met in class. And I think, you know, they helped me feel like comfortable in New York. I got to like have people who kind of knew a little more about life there. They'd lived there a little longer than me. And I don't know. It was just, it was great. And getting in UCB was a whole new world because the way they taught improv was completely different. And so I felt kind of mind fucked by that because they were obsessed with the game of the scene. And I had never really heard that before. Mm-hmm. And then I would do scenes and then they'd be like, okay, that was funny, but there was no game. And I'm like, but you said it was funny. So I don't really see why there's a problem here. So I had to learn that, but that was cool. And then I think once I moved out here, I auditioned for a team and got on. So like I immediately had that community here. So it was the timing of that, like spending that year doing the classes was great. And then got to come out and do it here.
It's so cool that you found your way into this world as a teenager. You know,
I feel lucky for that, for sure.
Yeah. But the thing that's popping into my head right now is meant to be. Like it was meant to be. You know, you had the talent, you just needed to find the place, but you, because of proximity to Chicago, and I mean, back then, I mean, just going downtown, going into Lincoln Park, Wicker Park, Bucktown, Wrigleyville, I mean, it was a magical place anyway, and to be able to participate in this very specific skill set that, you know, got you ready for UCB. Even though you have to learn the game within the scene and like their rules, everyone's rules. At the end, it's just fucking improv.
Yeah. Right? Totally. And you can't control what the other person is doing. So like, as much as I think that was something that I struggled with the game, because it was like, it felt very like writing, like, oh, I have, so I kind of can predict what they're going to want to do because they're going to see that and they're going to want to do that and they're going to do that again. And then I was like, oh, but then I think that helped me become a writer. It's like, I think without that, I kind of was floating, you know? And then once I understood that, I'm like, oh, there's a pattern. Okay. And then that was interesting. But yeah, I feel very lucky that I got to find that at a young age. And I think, but I also see it happen for people like later where like, then they just like have that explosion in their mind and it's like, oh, you fit into this group. And it's like, you find all these people. It's so cool. Like, I think when you feel like you're kind of weird, then you find all the improvisers and you're like, I'm not weird, dude. This is like, I'm like extremely regular. But the people all back down,
they're on her. Belle and Sebastian released their third LP, The Boy with the Arab Strap, in 1998, and it reached number 12 in the UK. Arab Strap garnered positive reviews from Rolling Stone and The Village Voice. However, Dix, the album had its detractors, including Pitchfork, which gave the album a particularly poor review, calling it a parody of their earlier work. Fuck you, Pitchfork. Wow. Pitchfork has since removed that review from their website and re-reviewed the album positively in 2018. During the recording of this record, longtime studio trumpet player Mick Cook was asked to join the band as a full member. The This Is Just a Modern Rock Song EP followed later that year. Of course, Belle and Sebastian continues on to this day. As Lauren mentioned earlier, the band released their 11th studio album, A Bit of Previous, in May of 2022. Those were just sort of the basic, early, old school Belle and Sebastian notes for our discussion today. Do you have any final thoughts about Belle and Sebastian?
Well, first of all, I don't think you can just erase a bad review and say, actually, now I like it. Like, I think you can change your opinion, but I just feel like you have to leave it up there. But okay, whatever. I just, you know, they're such a fun band and they're so, it's like, what I love is what I think the Smiths has too, which is like the really dark lyrics with the really like upbeat sort of tempo and melody and stuff. And that's, so many of their songs are about like depressed girls who can't get it out, get it figured out, you know? It's, I just love that. And I think it's like really relatable. And I, you know, I'm grateful that I found them. That guy that I liked ended up dating my best friend and I felt really sad. And so I'm glad that I liked the band enough that it's separated, you know, from the person who initially introduced them to me, and I could just enjoy them forever and ever. And I don't care where he is, you know?
Yeah. Fuck you. What's his name?
I'm not saying it.
Okay.
He's not getting that.
That giving him the satisfaction.
Son. Yeah.
Yeah. It is a drag when you associate a band that you love with an ex. And yeah. That can be, for me, that can be problematic.
He was never mine. So, you know, at least I have that.
The Smiths, God, talk about Evanston. The Smiths to me, because of my age, when The Queen Is Dead came out and you two, Joshua Tree, like, I promise you, you could walk down the hall of any dorm and either one of those records is coming out of the rooms.
That's awesome.
So when I hear that specific record, I'm in Evanston. I can smell it. Do you know what I mean?
But so am I. The Smiths really make me think of Evanston and driving around. And like, that's when I would like really get into my music in my car and be like, oh my God. And so like the Smiths, I remember listening for the first time as I think it was like the Best Of or something that I had in my car. And I just remember driving in downtown Evanston and being like, this is amazing. Like, and I love that about music, that like you can just find it like at any point in your life and it's like, it can blow your mind. Like that had been out for so long and I had heard some of the songs growing up, you know, but like I never got into it. And then to be a teenager and you're like, I need something that really articulates how I feel. And then you find it.
Well, I think, you know, as we wrap things up here, I think there's something about you magical ETHS students, honestly, with music, because your tastes were a little bit more eclectic than other parts of the country, for real. Like when I was there, Evanston was ska town. Like that wasn't a part of my teenage experience. Like it was like ska city. I'll always associate Fishbone with Evanston, and not because of Cusack. He was listening to that because it was fucking ska town. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And there actually was a ska scene when I was growing up in high school. Like there was a full on like punk ska moment but it was a lot of church kids. There was like a church kid. Like, there was like a group of church skaters. Like they were like really religious skaters. I know it's weird. I'm like putting this together now that was kind of odd. They had this thing. There's like a word for it. I'm sure it's like a Christian like group that it's just called this thing. I can't remember what it is right now.
But Edge.
No, I mean they were, but it was like more like an event that they would have every Thursday. You go to this place and it's called whatever, and they would have like dance parties, but it was like super chaste, you know. And it was like they would fucking ska out and like punk out to all these different world. And they were super skatery. It was like a totally different group. There was a subset religious skaters who like punk and ska.
Where's that documentary? That's such a specific group of people. Lauren, all I want to do is podcast with you.
I
could talk to you for an hour, hours and hours. But I got to let you go because you're a mom and you got a busy life and you probably have 8 million other things to do today.
Hey, I'm not going to lie. I do. But I'm happy to be here. This was a blast.
Well, I am so grateful for you for spending the time with me today. And what we'll do is we'll take this discussion and we'll add the music to it and you know, put it up there on the Twitter machine and Facebook and all that kind of stuff. And I just can't wait for people to hear this. But I'm so grateful for you because this is how I want to spend my time.
This is
talking
so
to Lauren Lapkus about Evanston, Illinois. That's
Thank
what I want to do.
Thank you for having me. This was a blast.
You're the absolute best. And to the rest of you, thank you so much for liking, listening, subscribing. So many great guests coming down the pipe. But come on, who's better than Lauren Lapkus? Nobody, nobody. And of course, the BrandoCast is produced by Mr. Richard Sheltinga. So until the next time, cats and kittens.
I'd outfit me as private and we'll sail around the world. I will be off adamant and you my wayward girl. Many nights of talking in hotel rooms can you take. How many nights of limping round on pagan holidays? Oh, elope with me in private and we'll set something ablaze. A trail for the devil.